Support for NPR comes from Heather and Paul Haga, supporting Salzburg Global Seminar, committed to helping tomorrow's leaders forge solutions today. More information is available online at salzburgglobal.org. And from the National Endowment for the Arts, art works.
New Jersey's Clean Energy Program proudly supports WHYY. New Jersey's Clean Energy Program, incentivizing businesses, local governments, schools, and residents to integrate energy-efficient and renewable technologies into their new construction projects, existing building upgrades, and new equipment installation. More information about modernizing in your home and business with support from New Jersey's Clean Energy Program at njcleanenergy.com/WHYY.
They're doing things a bit differently at one Philadelphia polling place on this election day. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The West Philadelphia Orchestra is performing at the polling location at 55th and Market Streets. WHYY's Peter Crimmins is there and joins us now. Peter, what are you hearing?
Well, I'm hearing the West Philly Orchestra. You can hear them behind me right now. This is at 55th and Market Street. It's a Salvation Army Community Center. It's a polling place. And the orchestra was here at the invitation of a Get Out the Vote initiative or program called Next Stop Democracy. And they're here just to get things exciting and make the polling place a little more festive.
Festive, and was there also an intent to try to lure more voters to the polls?
That is the intention. Next Stop Democracy also put up original artwork, signage, at 20 polling places around the city today. And this is the only place where they're having a performance. This polling place it's in the fourth ward. It represents four divisions, and the pollsters inside say among the four divisions, they've had about 500 people come through, just shy of 500 people, which they say is low. It's pretty low this far.
Great day for an outdoor concert. Is it your sense that it drew, if not voters, passersby who were curious?
There is a small crowd surrounding the band right now. I don't know if they voted. I don't know if they plan to vote. But they're certainly here listening to the band, and they seem to be enjoying themselves. A lot of kids and dogs.
Kids and dogs. Any sense that this will lead to copycat performances at other polling sites in the future?
Well, the Get Out the Vote initiative, Next Stop Democracy, tried to put performances like this in about a dozen. I think they asked 15 places if they would accept some sort of sidewalk performance. And all of them said no, except for this one. I think the Get Out the Vote initiative, the Get Out the Vote efforts, a lot of people felt was still a little too political. They felt that might be politicizing too much out in the sidewalk, so they just decided to play it safe and say no. But Salvation Army here in West Philadelphia said yes.
Enjoy the performance. Thanks, Peter.
Sure thing, Dave.
WHYY Arts and Culture reporter Peter Crimmins. At all the other polling places in the city and across the region, turnout has been predictably light. Those showing up have tended to be the regulars, like John Baker. On a break outside Jefferson Hospital this afternoon, he planned on voting after work.
I know a lot of people that don't vote. A lot of people in my family that don't vote, and they always talk about politics and say how things should be different, but they don't want to go out and try to make anything different, so had the opportunity.
Thomas Green of South Philadelphia is among the many voters who says he usually only votes in presidential elections.
I didn't know there was anything to vote on today. I'm pretty out of the loop.
In other Election Day news, spending in the race for the three Pennsylvania Supreme Court positions has set a new national record. The group Justice at Stake says independent groups and candidates combined will shell out more than $16 million once all the campaign finance reports are in. Lynn Marks of the group Pennsylvanians for Modern Courts, who wants appointed rather than elected judges, says that's out of order.
It's very distressing to know that the reason all of these ads are being made is because they're being paid for by special interest groups who have cases before the court.
The proposed constitutional amendment to replace elections with merit selection of judges has recently cleared a committee in the Pennsylvania House. Now, it's not clear if that bill, which has been around for many years, is gathering enough momentum to change how Pennsylvanians pick judges. Polls in Pennsylvania and New Jersey are open until 8 this evening. And then stay with WHYY throughout the evening as we bring you live reports and analysis from across the region. Restaurant inspection reports in Philadelphia will no longer be kept secret for 30 days before they're posted online in a searchable database. From WHYY's Health and Science Desk, Carolyn Beeler reports.
The Philadelphia Health Department threw out the longstanding wait period this week, saying it wasn't consistent with the Nutter administration's open data policy. A former lawyer for the city, Mark Zecca, says there was never any legal requirement for the delay, which was designed to allow restaurants time to appeal inspection reports.
Immediate publication of the reports is a good step forward. However, a more important step would be for Philadelphia to start closing restaurants that impair the public health and require them to make an immediate correction of those conditions.
Within about a month, the city hopes to publish restaurant reports online 1 to 3 days after the inspections are conducted. I'm Carolyn Beeler, WHYY News.
On Wednesday evenings, Philadelphia talk radio station WURD turns the airwaves over to teens. For an hour, the outspoken young hosts of Youth Words discuss topics ranging from bullying and drug abuse to popular entertainment and politics. Reporter Jeanette Woods found out what they think Philadelphia's next mayor should tackle. Her report is part of a collaboration between WHYY and WURD.
In a conference room across from the broadcast booth, high school students 15-year-old Tamir Harper, 16-year-old Olivia Haynes, and 15-year-old Morgan Bacon are hashing out topics for the live radio show they'll do in about an hour.
Well, right now we're kind of just going through our plan for the show and just talking it through because we haven't seen each other in a while and we've been talking and everything, but we have some articles out that we're going over and whatnot. So, yeah.
These teens are part of a revolving series of high school age hosts on Youth Words. The live call-in show gives young people a chance to discuss their views on local and national issues. The show is funded by a grant from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia as a unique violence prevention initiative, providing teens with a platform to talk to other young people and to adults.
The idea is that the more opportunities that we give our young people to get together, to get to know one another, and to express things that they love and dislike about their experiences, that there'll be less need for confrontation on the street and for the statistics to be as troubling as they are.
That's Stephanie Renee, WURD's program director. She hosts her own talk show, The Mojo, and is also the mentor and executive producer for Youth Words.
As we start tonight's program, we are discussing what?
So in tonight's program, we will be talking about what it's like being a student of color in the classroom, because we're all kind of coming from like different schools and whatnot, and our experiences are different.
Renee helps keep the group focused, which with teens is not always easy.
But there, you know, there should be some thoughts as hosts about how you're going to guide the audience through the points that you find significant.
Even though it's not a topic for tonight, talk strays to the upcoming city elections and the students' to-do list for the next mayor.
I'm really about youth homelessness.
Morgan Bacon wants services for homeless youth.
Get students off the streets and that we're in safer communities.
Olivia Haynes hopes more funding will go to enriching after-school activities.
What I would want from the new mayor is an environment in which young people can go and learn other things rather than just how to take a standardized test.
And Tamir Harper sort of launched his own pre-campaign.
I do hope in the future to run for a political office, starting with possible state representative and climb my way up to mayor. And I hope that soon to be mayor will look at initiatives to lower youth violence.
The hosts of Youth Words seem better informed about the candidates and their platforms than a lot of adults. And they all agree on one message to Philly's next mayor.
Engage the youth.
Yeah. We are your advocates and you should be our advocates as well.
By the time the next election comes, we'll all be making those decisions for the next president or the next mayor or city council member.
These young people know that their voices have power. For WHYY, in collaboration with WURD, I'm Jeanette Woods.
Turning to this evening's headlines, a 12-member jury has begun deliberating about whether Shaka Chip Fatah Jr. should be convicted of 23 federal tax and bank fraud charges. The trial concluded today with federal prosecutors portraying the son of Congressman Shaka Fatah as a scam artist who lied to receive bank loans that he then used for personal gain. Fatah closed his case by saying the government doesn't understand what it means to be a businessman and that he never intentionally lied on official documents. The trial of Fatah's father, Shaka Fatah Sr., is set to begin in May in a separate but related corruption case. Pennsylvania Turnpike officials say their inability to sufficiently punish toll violators helped contribute to the more than $33 million in outstanding and uncollected tolls. Other states can invalidate a vehicle's registration, levy fines, even impose jail time. But Commission Chair Sean Logan says Pennsylvania violators are simply billed for a toll from the furthest point, plus a $25 processing fee. And if they receive no response after the first or second notice, the case is then handed to a collections agency, which is prohibited from reporting non-payments to credit bureaus. Logan says the number of uncollected tolls will increase significantly if the turnpike continues to toll electronically without the ability to enforce those fees. Mostly clear skies, 62 degrees on Independence Mall. It's 6:17. You're listening to Newsworks tonight on WHYY. Clear skies, the call this evening. Low overnight around 50 degrees. Enjoy another sunny day tomorrow. Wednesday's high all the way in the mid-70s. Clouding up on Thursday, high 68 degrees, and overcast to start the day on Friday, then turning partly sunny, high 75. Saturday, overcast in the morning, again some breaks of sunshine by the afternoon, high 63 degrees, and ahead to Sunday, plenty of sunshine, high in the mid-50s. This is WHYY. Still ahead, an ancient play is given a new, demanding staging.
You're in a deep squatting position, and then you're rising and falling while also simultaneously sort of forcing air out through your diaphragm in a focused way.
Newsworks tonight continues on WHYY.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Of Mozart's 27 piano concertos, his final statement in the form may also be his most eloquent. Jonathan Biss joins the Philadelphia Orchestra for Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 27. And Robin Ticciotti returns to conduct Robert Schumann's Fourth Symphony. Mozart tickets at 215-893-1999 or at philorc.org. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center. Mozart and more with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Uber takes a lot of heat for the way it classifies its drivers as contractors instead of employees. The company's comeback goes a little bit like this.
The Uber platform technology is now making it easier for people to add to their income.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Chief Advisor David Plouffe on Uber and the freelance economy. That is next time on Marketplace from APM.
Coming up next on WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. When police officers decide which blocks to patrol, they usually look at where crime has happened in the past and then rely on their own hunches. But a growing number of city police departments are now considering the calculations of software programs that claim to predict where crimes will happen in the future. The companies that sell the software say it can help police catch criminals in the act and even prevent crime. Keystone Crossroads reporter Mariel Segarra has more.
Every morning, during roll call, police officers in Reading are handed maps, printed off a computer, of their patrol districts. A few spots on each map are highlighted with red boxes. Those are supposed to show the areas at highest risk for certain crimes during that shift. Those crime predictions were spit out by a software program called PredPol. It claims to predict the locations where various crimes are most likely to happen on a particular day. The city launched PredPol in 2013 for about $18,000 a year. Dozens of other police departments in the U.S. and abroad are using the software, too. PredPol runs off some pretty basic data: the type, location, and time of previous crimes. The software plugs that data into an algorithm that's based on, get this, math used to predict earthquake aftershocks. The reason is that scientists say after an earthquake, you're more likely to see aftershocks nearby. The same is thought to be true of certain crimes.
It's very common to take approaches from one scientific area and then adapt them to another scientific area.
That's RAND Corporation senior scientist John Hollywood, who researches predictive policing. So applying math from physics to crime is not as strange as it might sound. But even if the math is reasonable, how does PredPol work in practice? One morning, after getting his map, Reading police officer Jacob Stefani heads to his patrol car.
What's your location going to be?
I'll be in the northeast.
He tucks the map into the car's visor and pulls out of the station. Stefani says he spends a lot of time driving around the red boxes, trying to spot criminals in action, or just by being there, deter them from committing a crime. The police department has set the software to predict property crimes.
We're having a lot of daytime burglaries right now. So you're looking for maybe some young kids skipping school, breaking into houses, looking for anything out of ordinary, open doors, broken windows.
He sees a man kicking the door of a breezeway. He asks the guy for ID and finds out he lives in the house and locked his keys inside. Stefani also looks for people squatting in abandoned houses. He spots a boarded up house where it looks like somebody tried to pry the wood off the door.
What's my number? Security check building.
10-4, stand by.
I'm going to check out this place here.
Stefani walks down the breezeway to investigate. He quickly gives the all clear. There's no one in the backyard, but it's littered with empty soda cans, and the screen door is broken. There's gang graffiti on the wall. The officer walks back to his car. Stefani says it's good to have guidance from the software, but on days when he finds nothing in the red boxes, it's hard to tell whether the algorithm is working.
If no crime is happening, you don't really know if that's the result of you being a deterrence or just because that particular criminal didn't really feel like conducting a crime.
As you might expect, PredPol says its software works. A study published this year by the researchers who created the software showed the algorithm was between 1.4 and 2 times as accurate as crime analyst predictions in two cities. If the software weren't working, it'd be hard to know. PredPol's contract with the city of Reading requires the police department to participate in press conferences and joint marketing on behalf of the company. Its CEO says that's a reasonable obligation. PredPol isn't the only company in this business. Different crime prediction software is being used by police in cities like Philadelphia and Atlantic City, New Jersey. These programs use different algorithms, and there's little independent research on their accuracy. But one thing these software programs have in common is they're harnessing computers to process data criminologists say is important. PredPol CEO Larry Samuels says human beings could do the same thing, but it would take a lot of time.
The advantage of computers is that they just process on and on and on and on, and they're able to process huge amounts of information, and they're able to do it at incredible speeds.
A 2013 report from the RAND Corporation said these computer algorithms are not a crystal ball, and small cities that don't have a ton of crime data don't need to shell out for crime prediction software. They're free tools they could use instead. Reading Police Department officials say the software is working for the city, citing a recent drop in burglaries. But the number of burglaries in Reading has gone up and down for a decade. And Police Chief William Heim says introducing other crime-fighting measures like security cameras may have also contributed to a drop in crime.
I don't think any one tool is going to yield the results that we're seeing, but the combination of them, I think, is really good.
At least until he does get that crystal ball. Marielle Segarra, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on the challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY leads the four-station partnership. It's a safe bet that the ancient Greek classics in which the gods and fate control the plot never looked or felt quite the way they do these nights on the Avenue of the Arts in Center City, Philadelphia. That's where the Wilma Theater's production of Antigone, which Sophocles wrote nearly 2,500 years ago, is being staged with a new, extreme technique that makes radical demands on its actors. Newsworks theater blogger Howard Shapiro reports.
At a pre-show warm-up for the Greek tragedy Antigone, 11 performers stomp across the stage. They bend and contort their bodies in slow motion and make strange, haunting noises as if the gods are speaking through them. 3 years ago, the Wilma Theater's artistic director, Blanka Ziska, contacted Theodoros Terzopoulos in Athens. He's the go-to guy in Greece for interpretations of the classics, and for a technique that makes the performances more visceral. It requires arduous body and voice training from his actors. Ziska brought Terzopoulos over to Philadelphia for a workshop, and they decided to collaborate here. The result is a highly unusual production of Antigone, about a woman who buries her dead brother against the commands of an evil king who calls him a traitor.
In our theater, very important is the air, the inhalation. And if you are working with the air of the inhalation, exhalation, immediately you are, I have the feeling that you are more free and you can make more with the voice.
That's Terzopolis. Before every show, the cast limbers up at a training that takes about as long as the 80-minute show they're about to do.
Breathe deeply here, please.
They form a circle in the middle of the stage, working fingers, toes, and muscles. Vocal exercises come from deep in their diaphragms. Long exhalations sound like snakes hissing. The show is intensely athletic, with actors constantly on the move. Brian Ratcliffe is a cast member.
There are sort of two different types of movements. Some are sort of long and sustained, and then others are quick and sharp. You're in a deep squatting position and then you're rising and falling while also simultaneously sort of forcing air out through your diaphragm in a focused way and also moving your arms. It's almost aerobic in certain moments.
Terzopolis's techniques are unorthodox and he pushes his actors.
Well, I think the warm-up, the training, we tend to call it, gives you the stamina to do the work that he wants. So Mr. Terzopolis very much paints with human bodies.
The result can be a stunning display that lends itself to the life and death conflicts in ancient Greek texts. Antigone features actors from Philadelphia and Greece and is performed in English, Greek, and ancient Greek with surtitles. It's at the Wilma through November 8th. For WHYY, I'm Howard Shapiro.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. You can subscribe to a podcast of the show on iTunes. Polls across the region are open until 8, and then stay with WHYY throughout the evening for complete election results and analysis. You can also follow the results at facebook.com/newsworks. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Foundation helps private foundations by partnering on administration and grant making. Private foundations also can establish a donor-advised fund to save time and reduce costs. What's more, the Philadelphia Foundation also offers solutions when a private foundation has run its course. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or philafound.org.
The School in Rose Valley, a progressive preschool through elementary school, supports WHYY. Located on 9 acres near Media, Pennsylvania, SRV's balanced approach to education taps students' intrinsic motivation, features personalized instruction at every grade level, and emphasizes daily outdoor play. Hosting a family open house on Saturday, November 7th from 10 to noon. Details about the School in Rose Valley on their Facebook page or at theschoolinrosevalley.org.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Tracy Stewart. She and her husband, John Stewart, are starting a farm animal sanctuary, which has long been Tracy's dream. She's a former vet tech and describes herself as obsessed with animals. Her new book is called Do Unto Animals. Join us.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY-FM.